The Bible Study Podcast, episode 706. Today, the Bible Study Podcast continues with the study of 1 Corinthians with chapter 8. Welcome to the Bible Study Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We're going to deal today with an issue that I'm sure that has been just a burning concern for you and your church, and that is food sacrificed to idols. And I'm kidding about that. Now, about food sacrificed to idols, we know that we all possess knowledge, but knowledge puffs up while love builds up. Those who think they know something do not yet know as they ought to know, but whoever loves God is known by God. So then, about eating food sacrificed to idols, we know that an idol is nothing at all in the world, and that there is no God but one. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet there is but one God, the Father, from whom all things came and for whom we live, and there is but one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom all things came and through whom we live. But not everyone possesses this knowledge. Some people are still so accustomed to idols that when they eat sacrificial food, they think of it as having been sacrificed to a god, and since their conscience is weak, it is defiled. But food does not bring us near to God. We are no worse if we do not eat, and no better if we do. Be careful, however, that the exercise of your rights does not become a stumbling block to the weak. For if someone with a weak conscience sees you, with all your knowledge, eating in an idol's temple, won't that person be emboldened to eat what is sacrificed to idols? So this weak brother or sister for whom Christ died is destroyed by your knowledge. When you sin against them in this way and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if what I eat causes my brother or sister to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause them to fall. Okay, this probably sounds a little confusing. What is Paul talking about? What's this deal with the food sacrificed to idols? We know, for those who are familiar with the Old Testament, we're familiar with the burnt offerings and such that the people of Israel gave. Well, the people around them, the pagan people, those who worshiped the many gods of the Greek and Roman pantheon, also practiced sacrifice of animals to their many gods. Okay? Well, that's one part of the equation. The other part of the equation is your local butcher shop was likely at the back end of one of those temples. That if you're eating meat, you're likely eating meat that was sacrificed to an idol. So that's where everybody was, is that in Corinth, if you're eating meat, you're likely eating meat sacrificed to an idol. So this is not an issue of, am I vegan or vegetarian or carnivore or pescatarian or whatever. It doesn't have to do with that. It has to do with, where did this meat come from, and does that matter? Okay? So that's the first thing you need to know. Now let's go back and look at that first paragraph, that confusing first paragraph. We know that we all possess knowledge, but knowledge puffs up while love builds up. Why does he bring that up when he's just talking about dietary rules? Okay? He's saying, as he continues on here, he's saying, I know that many of you know that there are no other gods. Capital G. You know, maybe there are other lords. We see that in quotes, the English version, and gods in quotes. You know, maybe there are other powers that people call gods. Demons, other things that claim to be God. Caesar claims to be God. But he says, you know, and I know, that there's one God. The Father who created everything, and Jesus who through everything was created. Okay, so he says, you know and I know that those stone statues of Jupiter, of Mars, of Venus, of Aphrodite, of whoever, you and I know that those aren't gods. And so this food that was sacrificed to them was sacrificed to a marble statue. That there's nothing behind that, or at least nothing more important than God. It says, you and I know that. But he says, not everybody knows that. Remember that there are some people who are coming out of that pagan tradition, that tradition where they were worshiping at that temple, maybe as recently as last week. And so for them, this is more questionable. It isn't something that they know as definitively as you and I know that. And so he says, when he says we possess knowledge, we all possess knowledge, the knowledge that he's talking about is this knowledge that those idols are nothing. That God is God and there's no gods beside him. He says, you and I know that. We have this knowledge. But he says, be careful. Knowledge puffs up while love builds up. What does he mean by that? He's saying, so you and I know that, so we can easily look down on those who don't. But you're not called to be smart. You're not called to be knowledgeable. Those are great. You should be those. But you are called to love. So he said, the issue here is not what you know, but what you do. Okay. That's what that first paragraph is all about. So he says, those who think they know something do not yet know as they ought to know. Well, what does he mean? Well, he finishes the thought, but whoever loves God is known by God. So he's saying knowledge puffs up, love builds up. So if you think you know something, remember to know the more important thing, which is that it's all about love. It's not about knowledge. Okay. So he says, not everybody knows this. Some people are still so accustomed to idols. These are people who've come out of that tradition. They have sacrificed to idols. They've eaten the meat sacrificed to idols with the understanding that it was sacrificed to a god. And the problem is that if you and I eat this meat, we know that there's nothing behind it and it doesn't do us any harm. But if they eat it, they're going to have a guilty conscience that they're eating this meat sacrificed to another god. Because they don't know there's one God in heaven and everything else is fake. Okay? So, food does not bring us near God. We are no worse off if we do not eat, nor no better if we do. He says it's not a question of food anymore. It's not do you eat or do you not eat. Saying the same meat, when I eat it, I might be okay, but when you eat it, you might be sinning because you're eating it with a guilty conscience. Now, that's an interesting thing. You're not going to run into an issue, probably, with food sacrificed to idols. It's not going to be a big problem in your life. But there are things we can learn from this chapter that we can apply to other places. And the first one of it here is that it's not about the food. It's about whether you were acting against your conscience. And that's the first problem, is that you might eat, I might eat, and it might be a different value to each of us because of what we think is going on. Okay, so you could see that today we would have something more with somebody who thinks it's wrong to eat meat. And you think, no, meat was given to us and it's okay. God gave us meat to eat. That I can eat meat and be okay. You might have a guilty conscience if you eat meat. Then you shouldn't eat meat. Okay, we can do the same thing, but it might be sin for one and not for the other. And that's an odd thing to say, but it's, are you acting against your conscience? Even if you're wrong, okay? And he's saying a lot of you in the church, you just want to argue with that person that what they're doing is wrong or their knowledge of things is wrong. Knowledge puffs up. He says that is not the question. The question is, how do you love this brother or sister who will learn over time that it's just a hunk of stone, it's just a hunk of marble? But what are you going to do in the meantime? He says, be careful how you exercise your rights so that you do not become a stumbling block to the weak. Well, I live in a culture in the U.S. where we're really into our rights. And we claim rights for all sorts of things that are not rights. We don't even know what rights mean. And we can argue about what is right and what is wrong in terms of what the law tells us we can do. But we're all about exercising our rights. I have the right to. And you finish that sentence, and I guarantee you that 80% of the time that someone in the U.S. finishes that sentence, they finish it with something that they legally do not have the right to. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong here or not. It doesn't matter the knowledge. I can get all puffed up that I know that and you don't, right? But the question is, he says, be careful how you exercise what you think you can do, what you exercise your rights, so that you don't become a stumbling block to the weak. Okay? For someone with a weak conscience sees you with all your knowledge eating in the idol's temple, won't that person be emboldened to eat what is sacrificed to idols? So he's saying, if they see you eating that meat, which is okay for you, and they eat it, but it's not okay for them because they think there's more to it, you are causing them to sin. They're being destroyed by your knowledge. And then verse 12, when you sin against them in this way and wound their weak conscience. So that's an interesting thing. So me eating the meat that was sacrificed to idols, when I know that that's just a hunk of marble, is not a sin. But if I cause you to eat it, which we said it may be against your conscience, it may be a sin for you, but if I cause you to do it, then I just sinned against you. See, saying, what matters more? Is it the person or being right? Oh, wait, we were talking about that just within the last 2 weeks, weren't we? That whole thing with, why do you take someone to court? Wouldn't you rather just be wrong, just be wronged, rather than sue somebody, your fellow believer, in court? Isn't it better to be wronged than to sue them? Here it's saying, isn't it better to be wrong than to cause someone to do wrong? Even if you know that what they're doing is wrong, is not wrong. It's complicated, but there are different places where this has been applied more recently than this issue. So, for instance, there are places in the church where it is considered a sin to drink strong drink. And we know where that comes from. We know that there are places in the Bible that says, do not get drunk with wine, but instead be filled with the Spirit. That is in the Bible. And so getting drunk, not recommended, not good. So, but some churches say, we know that that is the case, and so therefore let's not drink at all, because we don't know who's going to be tempted and who's going to be not. Some people can't have one drink, which would be okay. They have to have, if they have one, they're going to have five, right? We know that. About 1 in 8 people have an addiction to alcohol, and so they said, wouldn't it be better if we just draw the line and say, let's not drink? And you can certainly see and make a good argument for that, especially if it may cause your brother to sin. If they see you drinking, they may think it's okay for them, okay? So that would be one case. The other case would be that same person who is now dealing with somebody who come with a different tradition, and they came from a tradition where, in fact, not only is drinking okay in moderation, but we served wine at communion. Well, you always serve grape juice at communion. You can argue about who's right, but when you have that friend over who doesn't drink, maybe it'd be better to not drink that night. Would it be a big deal to forego that drink, not so that they don't think you drink, not so that you can pretend to be something you're not, but to not offend their conscience, not cause them to do something that they think is wrong? So when he says here, therefore, if what I eat causes my brother or sister to fall in sin, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause them to fall. He's saying, I like a good steak, but he said it would be better for me to give up meat forever, if necessary, for the benefit of those who may stumble when they see me eat it. How much is our faith as selfless as Paul is talking about? How much am I willing to give up what I think is my right I have a right to. You can fill in, I don't know what that sentence is for you, but how much more important is that right to you than that brother or sister? How much do we put our rights over the benefit of those around us? One of the ones I think about here, and I try and stay away from politics, but this is one of the ones that I see it acting out right now. People say I have a right in the middle of a pandemic not to wear a mask because I have that right. Well, technically, legally, no. That's not really true. You can't find that anywhere legally, things like that. You just feel that you have the right. But it doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong, right? It just, that's what you feel. But is it more important to wear that and potentially protect someone else? Is it more important that you have that right, or is it more important the benefit of those around you? Now, obviously, if you think the reason you don't wear it is you don't think they're very, you know, they have any benefit, I could see why you might feel that way. But on the other hand, is it that big a deal? Right now it is for many people, including many Christians. And I just wonder if that is one of those cases where we're claiming our rights and we're focusing on our rights, which you and I both do, where that may not be the most important question. The question is not, do I have a right to do this? The question is, who benefits by my actions and what would God have me do? And that's what Paul is getting at. So even if you don't come across this issue of eating meat or not, you're going to come across the issue of, you know, masks or drinking or whatever the decision is where you and I have different opinions and what's, and again, something may be right for you and wrong for me. And how do we deal with those issues and how do we tackle them? And Paul says the way you tackle them first is you say, what would love cause me to do? And with that, we're going to end this episode of the Bible Study Podcast. If you have any questions, send an email to host@thebiblestudypodcast.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at thebiblestudypodcast.com. And thanks so much for listening.
Hello, my name's Rachel Carmen, and I want to invite you to come over and listen to my podcast. It's called Real Refreshment. For years and years as a young mother, I chased after the wind, thinking that the world could offer me the refreshment I longed for. But it was only when I discovered it in the person of Jesus Christ that I really found refreshment. Come on over and join me as we dig into Bible study. I'll see you there.